You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
So here we are with our spoiler alert series, and what series about movies would not be, we have to do a series about movies and start with a movie. So you're about to watch a clip from the movie A Knight's Tale, and in this particular scene, there are two characters, and one of them is Sir Thomas Coville, who is a jouster supreme, well known for his skill, well known for how good he is. And then you've got also Sir Ulrich Lichtenstein, played by Heath Ledger, who is essentially a poser. He's a fake, but that's all, well, spoiler alert, sorry about that. But that's part of the plot. But in this particular scene, these two people are jousting, and they're being observed by the kind of the head guy, and you'll see him in the chair. And something unique happens in this scene as these two guys, Sir Thomas Coville and Sir Ulrich von Lichtenstein, or just von Lichtenstein, joust. So go ahead and watch this. If you didn't see what was going on there, kind of put the pieces together. Coville, who has been a distinguished jouster, gets hurt because of Sir Ulrich, and he cannot continue. And so he asked him, to basically give him his honor. And at the last minute there, they both raised their jousts. And when Ulrich had the chance to finish him off, and just to decimate the opponent and show everybody that he was a force to be reckoned with, he pulls up his joust. It's a draw, and Coville walks away with his honor. And of course, in that very end part there, why didn't he finish him off? Because he showed mercy. And so we're going to talk today about that word mercy, and look at this idea of what does it mean to show mercy. We talk about it, you hear that phrase a lot, and I'm going to tie it into this idea of the story, not the idea, of the tale, the historical fact of Jesus and what he has done for us. This series is going to take place, we're going to be on the cross throughout this month. We are going to be talking and looking at some of the different things that Jesus said while he hung on the cross, and some of the things that are really interesting about that. And of course, the cool part about this month and the way it works out this year, and I love it, is that the end of the month, the last week of the series, is Easter Sunday. So again, spoiler alert, he's going to live. You thought he was dead, but he's not. He's going to win. He's going to live at the end. And so I want to look at this idea of mercy and talk about a few things. But here is this week's spoiler. In case you weren't sure, the point that I want you to understand is that the spoiler is that we don't get what we deserve. We don't get what we deserve. We think we do, you thought you might, but we don't. And we'll look at that in a little bit here and go a little bit further along with that. But what I want to do also with this series is kind of walk you through. If you grew up in church, you may have, you may be familiar with Jesus and the crucifixion. And even if you didn't, most likely you've heard of this idea. You've heard of Jesus and the cross. You've been to an art museum. At any point, you see tons of representations of that over the years, over the centuries. And so I wanted to kind of take all these things that we might know and put them together and just kind of walk you through the timeline of what really happens in terms of chronological order of what happens with Jesus on the cross. Just to put the pieces together in case maybe you knew some things, you didn't know some things, but just to bring it all together, just this is more for your information, just to be able to go, oh, okay, I never got that. So this is on the cross. It's a timeline. And understand, we're starting, there's some things that happened before this, a lot of things that happened before this. But even the night before, of course, if you're familiar with the story of Jesus, as the trailer there was so, there was the garden, and there were some things that happened there. There were some trials, and we're not talking about all that. There's plenty of great stuff there, but I'm going to specifically start with leading right up to the cross. What was going on? And so this is just, again, for your information, just to kind of help you put the pieces together. The first thing that we see is the beating. The first thing that the Bible records in terms of chronology, in terms of timeline in order, is that there was the beating where you get the crown of thorns. Now understand that earlier in the story of that night, when Jesus was put on trial, he was beaten by Pilate. He was ordered beaten, hoping that the people would see him get beaten and be like, okay, you know, that's good enough. We're happy. But they were shouting, crucify. Again, that's for another story. But it seems that at this moment, after he has been condemned to death, he has been convicted, Pilate says, okay, everybody agrees. The Roman soldiers then get Jesus, and they kind of, before they take him off to the cross to be crucified, this is where they mock him. And again, if you're familiar with the story, and actually, just when you think about the pictures maybe you have seen, at this moment, he is not on the cross. He is at a location, a Roman leadership location, let's just call it that for now. And this is where the soldiers put a purple robe, which was the sign of royalty, on him. And then they take a thorns and weave it into a crown. Now, the thorns of the bushes at that time, we're talking some significant things. It's not like a little rose bush, which are annoying in themselves, but we're talking something serious. And they pushed it down his head, of course, sticking those thorns into him. And the whole reason was that Jesus claimed to be the king of the Jews. He claimed to be the king. And so these Roman soldiers were essentially mocking him for that. They put this crown on him, they put the robe on him, and then they beat him, kicked him, and spit on him. And so all of that kind of happens leading right up. And this is, by the way, there's a fancy word, if you're looking for this, in terms of putting the stories of the Gospels together. There's a fancy word called a harmony. And a harmony is where they take the four different Gospels and line them up together. And so I'm going to give you essentially a harmony of this story. And what you need to understand also, and we did this back during the Word series, we've talked about this in the past, but the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they are four different people, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, writing from their four different perspectives on what happened to Jesus, on Jesus' life. And so you're going to see, as you read the four different Gospels, you'll see different things. And of course, my illustration back when we did the Word series is I brought up four people and have them describe the room. And these four people describe different things. Some said black walls. Some said white wall. Are they wrong? No, they're both accurate, but they're different people's perspectives. Some would say lights. Other person said chairs. You know, so the issue with the Gospels is they're four different perspectives on the same thing. And it doesn't, because they're different, doesn't mean they're inaccurate. They're just different perspectives. And so what I've got here is you've got this harmony taking all these different views, these four different guys' views, and putting them together in an order. And so the beating and the crown of thorns takes place in Matthew 27, in case you care, and Mark 15. And so that's where you see that happen. So that's kind of the first event leading to the cross, to the crucifixion. The next thing we have is, they took the crown of thorns off and then went to this next stage of carrying the cross to Golgotha. So a lot of times we'll see the picture of Jesus hanging on the cross with a crown of thorns. Technically, is inaccurate, because that was done at this moment right prior to that. So then, part of Roman punishment, part of the idea of crucifixion, and we'll talk about that in just a second here, was that the person that was condemned to death, that was condemned to be crucified, they had to carry their own cross. Now, there's some dispute over what that looked like. It could have been the full thing. Now, understand, this is you know, probably at least 10 feet tall, something at the very least that would get the person off of the ground. Most likely even higher than that is a large piece of wood that they were placed on and nailed to, and we'll get to that in a second, like I said. But they had to carry this cross to the place of their execution. So it could have been the full cross, or it could have been just the cross piece, which was the one where the arms were placed on. Either way, it was heavy, it was hard. And in this particular scenario, if you read the four different Gospels, and here we're looking at Matthew 27, 31 to 34, Mark 15, Luke 23, and John 19. If you read those, you're going to see a couple of different things. And the first thing you'll see is that they made him carry his cross. And then you'll see they made a man named Simon carry his cross. So wait, what's going on here? The issue was that a crucified person, a person condemned to death, was required to carry their own cross. And so Jesus was most likely carrying his cross. He had been beaten. He had been up all night. He was beaten earlier. If you've seen the Passion of the Christ, I mean, when you're talking about this is not just a little like, ow, this is a serious kind of violent occasion. And so most likely Jesus could not physically carry his cross any further. So there's a man named Simon that was nearby. They grabbed him and said, "You carry his cross." And if you grew up in church in 1980, you're singing along with me. "You carry..." Anyway. sorry. So he's carrying the cross, and that was part of the punishment. So now you've got this guy Simon carrying the cross for him. That's why these two different views might not seem to fit together, but that is most likely how it worked, because physically that is a big deal for someone to carry. And so they went to Golgotha, and this is an interesting thing. Golgotha, just for fun, and is the word Golgotha is an Aramaic word. And it means the place of the skull. And they say that historically, looking at the geography of the area, that this hill actually from a distance could look like a skull. It looked like it was a skull. So this was called Golgotha. That's where Jesus was crucified. And so he was taken to this place called Golgotha. The Greek word for Golgotha is, let me say it the right way, it's cranion. So you might have heard the word cranio, craniotomy, craniosynostosis, and the word referring to the skull. And then the interesting thing here, the Latin word for this is Calvaria. And so that word means skull. And it's interesting, my previous church was Calvary Bible Church, and it's kind of got an edge to it because it actually means Skull Bible Church. You know, like that's what it means. So that's what the word Calvary, and so if you're always like, "I never even see Calvary in the Bible," it's actually the Latin translation of the word Golgotha, which means skull. So they required to carry their cross to Golgotha. Now we're at Golgotha. We're at this place of the skull, and at this point, Jesus is crucified. And crucifixion is a means, the word means to nail, usually, someone to a cross where they would asphyxiate and die. And there's a lot to tell you here. I've talked about this before. The first thing to understand about crucifixion, and I said this again, a lot of this is repeat because I've talked about it before, but it is considered, even to today, probably one of the most inhumane, most torturous ways of dying. It was so bad that the Romans, that was their method for execution, sorry, lost the word there for a second. That was their method for execution, but it was so bad that Romans their law didn't allow them to execute other Romans. They did it for other people, but Roman law prevented Romans from executing themselves because they're like, "We're not doing that. That's awful." And so crucifixion was this method, and the way it worked, and again, I've talked about this before, so I apologize if it's repeat, but I think it's important to understand the concept, is that your hands and feet were nailed to this cross. So it is a cross beam, like a T, and in the process, when they would lift this cross into the ground and drop it, all of the weight was hanging on your hands and on your feet, and your shoulders, when it would drop into the ground, would be dislocated. And so because of that, the people that were crucified would die from asphyxiation. They would suffocate to death because their shoulders were dislocated, and you actually needed to pull up against the nails in order to exhale, which is a different kind of thing. It wasn't to inhale, it was to exhale. They would need to pull up so that they could exhale and breathe out. And what would happen over time is that they would wear out. There's only so much that you can do to pull up when you've been beaten, when you've been hanging on the cross for hours, days. And, of course, pulling against these nails that are placed into most likely your wrist, because that's where they would fix it there. And you would pull up against that in order to keep breathing. And eventually the person would be exhausted and then die because they would suffocate. Their own shoulders would suffocate them to death, which also leads to, and we'll talk about this in a couple more weeks, but in part of the process, when they were running out of time, we're like, "We need this dude to die," they would go and break the legs of the person that was on the cross, because when they broke the legs, they could no longer push up from their feet, and all of their strength was dependent upon their arms. And, of course, they would give out faster. So that is what crucifixion was, how it worked. It was a way that they would kill someone. And, of course, they were also done in a way that was very public. Everyone could see it. And we'll see here in a minute that, they most likely completely naked, to be just an added sense of humiliation. So they are up there, out exposed, and died for all to see. And so that's what Jesus was done. They took him to this place, to Golgotha. He was condemned to death and crucified on a cross. And that is in Matthew 27, 35 to 36, Mark 15, Luke 23, 33 to 34, and John 19. And so that's the crucifixion. And then the next stage, the next step at this point, was that they put a sign above the cross. Now, it was very normal in the process of crucifixion for a sign that would display their punishment, their what they did to break the law. What do we call that? Their crime. Thank you. their crime. Would a sign would be placed above us to be like, oh, you know, they murdered that person. Or, oh, they stole that dude's cows. You know, whatever it is, that would be placed above them. And so there was a sign that was placed above Jesus. And it was made by Pilate, and it said, now, if you look at the four different Gospels, you'll see different bits and pieces of this, and this sign was translated into three different languages, so it's very possible, there's not a problem with the fact that each Gospel has a slightly different version, because it most likely said, this is Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. And again, translated into three languages. And if you look at the different Gospels, if you look at Matthew 27, 37 to 38, if you look at Mark 15, 26 to 27, Luke 23, 38, and John 19, 19 to 22, they all have sort of different parts of that. But that is most likely what it said. And of course, in John, you've got the Jewish leaders who were the ones that wanted him crucified in the first place. They were ticked off because Pilate said that his crime, again, this is the sign that said his crime, was that his crime was that he was King of the Jews. And the Jewish people didn't like that because they're like, no, he's not our king. He's just, why don't you say that he pretended to be king of the Jews? And Pilate's like, dude, what I've written, I have written. And so it was kind of an added thing, understanding that this isn't just a sign to be like, oh, hey, I was, you know, doing the tour and like, oh, Jesus over there. Okay, there's the Mona Lisa, you know. Like it was to show the crime that they committed. And Pilate intentionally wrote that his crime was that he was king of the Jews. And that is why Jesus was hanging on the cross, was because the Jewish people didn't like the fact that he, according to them, claimed to be the king of the Jews. He said that he was the greatest. So that is kind of the four parts of where we're going to look today. We'll stop. We're going to pick it up next week and kind of do some more and kind of get you from this moment of beating to the moment of death on the cross. But just to give you a little bit of the order of which these events happened and how it took place. But I want to look specifically, now I want to zoom in a little bit into this crucifixion. I want to zoom in and look at Luke chapter 23. So if you have your Bibles, the lights are coming on. If you have a paper Bible, you can go to Luke 23. If you've got the YouVersion app, tap on Luke, tap on 23. We're going to be talking about YouVersion in a little bit later this morning as well. But I want to look at this passage and talk about, now going back to where we were at the beginning, talk about this idea of mercy and the fact that we don't get what we deserve. And just to understand too, as we look at this series, as we look at these different sayings, these different statements that Jesus made from the cross, my goal is just for us to kind of go, whoa. I mean, if you walk away here and you go, whoa, then I'm cool with that. If you walk away and are just even slightly going, wow, that's a big deal. Because if you're this is your first time in church ever, this is probably new stuff to you, and that's cool. And maybe you've heard like other bits and pieces, or you've seen things, or you know whatever is out there talking about Jesus. But especially for those of you that have been in church before, have been in church maybe all of your life, maybe the last few years, you've heard these phrases and you've gotten kind of understand some of these things. But I want to just break it down and help us to step back and go, whoa, that's a big deal. And so that's what we're looking at here. So this is Luke chapter 23. We're looking at a couple of verses here in verse 33 and 34. And it says this, and I apologize for the contrast. I will fix that next week. When they came to the place called the skull, which the word in Aramaic is Golgotha, and the Greek is cranion, and Latin is Calvaria. When they came to the place called the skull, they crucified him there. We talked about what that was. Along with the criminals. Now, there were two criminals there with him, one on his right, and the other one on his left. And so there were two criminals there, and we'll talk more about them next week. But they crucified him with two criminals. And at this moment, Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And they divided up his clothes, by casting lots. And again, so his clothes were taken off of him, and they were divided up. And there's lots of prophecy and cool stuff in there too, but we're going to leave that alone for now. So I want to look at this idea of these people, these people, the Jewish Roman leaders are crucifying, are condemning to death, are beginning the process of execution of the Son of God. Now, I'm not going to prove that to you. I'm not going to explain why that's all true and accurate. But let me just say it this way, that Jesus was the only person, fully man, fully God, the only person on this earth who never sinned, who never did anything wrong. And so he was unjustly accused. And you've got this beautiful moment where you've got these people crucifying him, nailing his hands and feet to a cross, fully expecting him to die in the next few hours or days. And at that moment, Jesus says, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And so I want to look at this idea of how they're not getting it while they're not getting it. And that'll make sense in a little bit here. So they're not getting it while not getting it. The first thing we see here is that there is a sin situation. There is a sin situation. Because these people and the Roman Jewish leaders, and by the way, physically, the actual physical thing happening, it was the Romans that were in charge of crucifixion, of execution. So they were the ones physically nailing his hands and feet. But, you know, representatively, is that a word? It is now. Representatively, you know, all of the people involved in accusing him and condemning him and lying and all of that stuff, they were just as much culpable. They were just as responsible as the Roman leaders. Okay, so don't miss that. Like, oh, you know, those were the bad guys. It was the whole process here of the fact that the Son of God, the innocent, perfect, not done anything wrong Son of God, was being crucified. And so there's a problem here, and that's the first part of this verse. It says, there they crucified him, or they crucified him there. So just understand that there's a problem. There's a situation here that's an issue, because someone is getting killed. Someone is being essentially murdered for doing nothing wrong. And that is what these people are doing. And so that creates this tension, this issue of, okay, now these people are doing something wrong, because they have turned their back on this one of all the people. He is the one that probably shouldn't have been there. And so these people are crucifying Jesus. They are crucifying him. They are nailing him to a cross because, and it just as a nuance, a demonstration of the fact that they are sinning, that they are turning their back on God. And we talked about this last month in the breadcrumb series. Sin, you know, God has this perfect mark, this perfect goal set out for us. And sin is any time we don't follow that. And so, you know, I guess what I'm just looking at here is, I hope you will agree with me that these people had a sin situation. These people had a problem because of all the people on the earth, they were in the process of killing someone who did not deserve death. And again, there's another word for that. It's called murder. They were responsible for murdering Jesus as the one who didn't deserve it. So there's a problem here, and we'll break this down in a second here. So there's a sin situation. The second thing here is that there is a God separation. There is a God separation. And here's the thing, and this is, we'll be looking at this over the next 4 weeks, so the whole picture will come together. But the fact that these people are sinning, the fact that anyone sins, that anyone chooses to do their own thing rather than follow God, it causes a problem where we are separated from God. And Jesus is aware of this. And again, we're getting really, really picky and specific here. But when they came, they crucified him there, the criminals on the left, one on his right. And at that moment, Jesus said, "Father." And this is a big deal, because Jesus understood that their act of sin and anyone's act of sin has separated them from God. Separated. There is no longer a connection. And Jesus got that. Because he says, in this moment, and again, it's just a word, but he says, "Father." He didn't say, "Hey, you over there, these people are wrong." He didn't call out to Pilate, the leader of the Romans. He didn't call out to Herod. Herod was the king. to Herod? Herod, yeah. Doesn't sound right. Anyway, to Herod, you know, he didn't call out to any of those people. Not to his mom, not to the disciples. He said, Father. Because he understood that that act is just a microcosm, just a piece of a bigger problem. Because these people were unjustly killing someone. These people were sinning. And because of their sin, they are separated from God. And that's the same thing for anyone who sins is separated from God. And so Jesus, on the cross, says, Father. And that word means so much to us. Because Jesus was aware of that problem. And he didn't talk to anyone else. He talked to his Father. He talked to God. Because of our sin, because of their sin, because of everyone's sin, we deserve death. That is what sin requires. Sin requires death. Jesus didn't sin, and yet he was dying. So there's two things here. Then there's that sin situation, and then the God separation. So understand these two pieces. This creates a problem. Because of sin, people are separated from God. If that was the end of the story, we are all, these people and us included, because any of us that have sinned, any of us that have not followed God, have done one wrong thing, are separated from God, are destined for hell. So life sucks. That's the end. Enjoy it while you've got it, because when you die, you're done. It's hell. You thought it was hell now. It's going to be really hell then. But see, the whole point of the cross was that God wasn't content with that ending. He wasn't satisfied with that ending, because there's a problem here, but he wasn't satisfied. And so what he said led to a forgiveness. What do I have here? Forgiveness desperation. Because we need these people and us, and I'm bringing us together with them. We need forgiveness. We are desperate for it, because without being forgiven, we're on our way to hell. Without being forgiven, these people that are crucifying Jesus, that were a part of the trial, anyone that has turned their back on God is destined for hell. And the only way to deal with that is through forgiveness. And so these people are desperate for forgiveness. We are desperate for forgiveness. If we did not get it, we're done. But Jesus says, Father, forgive them. Jesus realizes that. God understands that. That is why Jesus came to this earth. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. But that God's Son came to the earth to offer us forgiveness because of the problem. Because we were separated. And so I just want you to understand not only just a big theological implication, the big fancy words there, but not just understanding that this is a big deal, that Jesus died on the cross, that Jesus forgave us because of our sin problem. But just look at the moment of what is going on here. They are nailing him to a cross, and he is going to God and saying, forgive them. It's huge. I mean, I don't know. Can you forgive someone who's punching you in the face? Would you be able to do that? But here you've got Jesus. The moment he's being nailed to a cross, knowing he's going to die, he's already been beaten, and his response isn't, Father, strike him down because you're God. His response isn't, Father, boom, smoke, gone. His response isn't, Father, take me away and I'll be gone. His response is, Father, forgive them. Because he understood that we have this problem and that we need that forgiveness. Which then leads, and this is the beautiful thing, it leads to the next part of it, which is the mercy solution. The mercy solution. He says, forgive them, which, by the way, the Greek word for forgive, we've talked about this a couple weeks ago. It means to let it go, to aphiemai, to release, to be gone with. And that's what Jesus is saying, release, God, do not hold this against them, let them go. He says, for they do not know what they are doing. And the word know is that there's two Greek words for knowledge. And one is to know, and this one is that it's a oida. It's to kind of understand, recognize, to realize. And Jesus is saying, God, forgive them, because they don't realize what they're doing. They don't get it. They don't get what's going on here. And it's different from knowing, like, oh, they clearly understand what's going on. The word that means knowledge. These guys didn't understand. They didn't realize what they were doing. So Jesus says, forgive them. Because they don't know what they're doing. And so mercy kind of steps in here. Because mercy is this idea, and we'll have this in a second, but the idea of not getting what we deserve. And see, every one of these people in this story, every one of the people in this situation, and every one of us deserves death. That is our punishment for the crime. And Jesus is here on the cross saying, Father, forgive them, because they don't get it. They don't get it. They don't understand what's going on here. And so not only do they not get it, they not understand what they're doing here, they're also not getting it. Because they're not getting the punishment they deserve because of what Jesus is doing at that moment, because of Jesus being on the cross. So you've got these situation here where we need help. We're stuck. We need mercy. We need to get that thing that we so desperately need. We need to be forgiven. We need to be shown mercy. And in that scene in A Knight's Tale, the guy was shown mercy. He could have won. He could have decimated him and demonstrated how powerful and good of a jousterator he is. But instead, he showed mercy. He didn't give him what he deserved. And in ATU, you're going to have a chance to talk more about that and look at this with one of the activities that you're doing. But what is mercy means not getting what we deserve. And there it is right there. Mercy is not getting the punishment that we deserve. And so each week we're going to look at these big words, some of these important words. And this one is mercy. And it means not getting what we deserve. And God has shown us mercy. Jesus is on the cross. And these people deserve death. They're literally nailing him to the cross. And he is saying, Father, forgive them. Because they don't know what they're doing. Forgive them. They don't realize it. They're not getting it. And he's asking his Father in that moment to forgive them, to release them, to let them go from this situation. Because the spoiler is that we don't get what we deserve. We deserve death. We deserve punishment. I said it over and over. And we don't get it. God has rescued us from that. So what do we deserve? So let's, again, to kind of bring this together. Jesus is on the cross saying, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. What do we deserve? What is it that we're... What do we deserve? I mean, I said sin, death, but we'll look at this a little bit. The first thing we deserve is banishment. Banishment. The Bible says that we are, our sin has separated us from God. If you remember, if you know the story of the Garden of Eden, back at the very beginning, Adam and Eve, things were good, things were cool, there was no sin. They were sinless, and they chose to disobey God, and God had to send them out of the Garden of Eden. They had to be banished. They had to be sent out from God's presence because of their sin, because a holy God and the presence of sin, they cannot be together. And so we had to be sent away. That's what we deserve. We deserve to be banished. We've done it. We've messed up. We've screwed up. We have not followed God. And whether you read the Bible, whether you don't know the Bible, there are things we know that this is wrong and this is right. And when we choose to do the wrong, then we've sinned and we've messed up and we deserve banishment. We deserve to be sent away from the presence of God. But God offers us presence. We get his presence. Romans 5, 6 through 8 is kind of a very perfect capsule of what Jesus was doing on the cross. Paul writes this letter to the church in Rome and he says, you see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, when we were still turning our way, Christ died for the ungodly. People not following him. That would be people like me and like you. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person. Though for a good person, someone might possibly dare to die. Jesus is saying, or Paul is saying that, if you know someone and you like them and you're friends and they're a good person, you might be willing to die for them. You might. They might be willing to die for you. But he says, but look at this. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. See, we don't even deserve it. We deserve to be sent from God's presence. We deserve, and these people that are crucifying Jesus did not deserve for Jesus to say, forgive them. What they deserved was die. I mean, honestly, and Jesus, fully man, fully God, being nailed to a cross, has been beaten by these people, going to be executed. If anyone had the right, Jesus did, to say to those people, go to hell, because they deserved it. Because that is the response. That is the separation from God. But God, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. While they are nailing him to the cross, he is saying, Father, forgive. Because he wasn't content with that separation, wasn't content with that banishment. The second thing we deserve is detachment. And I know I'm getting really goofy with the things today. Detachment. And this is something that, I don't know, like when we consider the fact that we have been offered life, we have been offered hope, we have been offered God's presence, we have been offered a way past our sin. You know, God could have just been like, okay, I'll see you later. I fixed this problem. You're not banished anymore. You'll get my presence, but, you know, come and see me when you're dead, kind of a thing. But he doesn't. And we deserve to be separated or have our relationship separated from him. But instead, God offers us a relationship. Through Jesus, we're not separated. We're not on our own. Like right now, we have the opportunity to have a relationship with Jesus. And I'm not just, I don't mean that in a churchy sense. I mean in like, you've got a friend in Jesus. I mean, you do. Like, he is, we're not alone. We're not separate. Like, you're not by yourself. You might feel alone. You might feel like there is no one that cares about you. You might feel like there's no one that matters. No one, you know, who cares what happened? No, we have relationship. And that's what, in 2 Corinthians, Paul's writing to the church in Corinth. He writes a different letter. And he says, all of this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ. He fixed the relationship. Jesus reconciled us to himself. He didn't wait for us to come to him. He came to us. The same theme. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. He reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them. And he has committed to us the message of reconciliation, which is what Kirk was praying. You know, we've got this message, and now it's our job to say, hey, God has fixed it. Jesus was on the cross saying, Father, forgive, because he wanted to make the relationship right. He wanted to make the relationship whole. He wanted to fix it. So where we should be separated, we should not have no relationship, we should be detached from God, we get a relationship. That is what we deserve, is that detachment. The third thing that we deserve is punishment, and this is what I said already. Paul writes in the letter to the back that we talk about Romans, the letter to the church in Rome, and says that the result of our sin is death. It's separation. It's punishment, eternal punishment, death in hell. And that's what hell is. I mean, all this stuff, we're packed with full of just meaty things here, but we're going to be looking at these each week. But we deserve punishment. That's what we deserve. That is what you deserve. That is what I deserve. We do not deserve mercy. We don't deserve God saying, you know, okay, I'm going to let you go. We don't deserve God saying, I forgive you. We deserve punishment because of our sin. It is what it is. It's the fact. It's the truth. But we get life instead. And this is John 3:16. This is John's perspective on the life of Jesus. And John writes, for this is how God loved the world. Actually, Jesus is speaking here. He gave his one and only Son, so that everyone who believes in him will not perish, but have eternal life. God sent his Son into the world not to judge the world, but to save the world through him. If you've been to a football game, I mean, John 3:16, right? That's the thing they throw up, and we know it. They don't throw it up. That'll be, anyway. That's the sign they put out there. but the fact that everyone who believes will not perish, will not die. We deserve death, but God loved the world, so he sent Jesus. God loved us, so he sent Jesus to die on the cross so that we can have eternal life, so that we're not stuck in punishment in hell forever. And that's for everyone who believes in him. That's all it is. It's a simple belief. But as you understand the fact that Jesus is on the cross because of all this, because we deserve punishment, we deserve detachment, we deserve for God to leave us alone and have nothing to do with us. We deserve to be banished from God's presence. But God loved the world enough to send Jesus. And so I want you to get, again, if you're just walking away going, whoa, that's all that matters. Understanding that this is what the cross was all about. This is what death of Jesus was about. This is him on that cross saying, Father, forgive them. They don't realize what they're doing. They don't get it. And this is you and me, right? Because how many times do we not do what we know God? And if I don't know, maybe you don't buy the whole God thing. And that's fine. Just listen. But there's this part of us where we're like, we turn away. We know we're doing it wrong. And because of that, we deserve all these things. But we don't get it. Because God has shown us mercy. We don't get what we deserve. Jesus is on the cross saying at the moment of being nailed there, Father, forgive them. Because they don't get it. They don't realize it. And for us, when we don't realize it, we don't get it, we turn our own way, we do our own thing, we disobey God, we whatever. Jesus is there saying, Father, forgive them. Because they don't get it. They don't realize what's going on right now. Because we don't get what we deserve. And that is mercy. I mean, we can show tons of movie clips. I had to sort through all the different movies for this week to show the different times where people didn't give someone what they deserve. And that is us. And here's the way I've illustrated this in the past. And again, if you've heard me say this, then, you know, share along in your head. But mercy is this idea of you're driving down the road. And most likely between Reidsville and Milroy, statistically. And you're driving on 322 between Reidsville and Milroy, and you're going over the speed limit, which, by the way, is 55, just in case you weren't sure. But you're driving between Reidsville and Milroy on 322, and you're not going 55. You're going a little bit more, north of 55. 70. 75. More than the speed limit. And so at that moment, you are going faster than the law will allow. If you are going 56, you have broken the law. You might say, well, I just broke it a little bit. That's true, but you broke the law. And you are now a lawbreaker. You are. And because you are going 56 in a 55 zone, or maybe you're going 70 in a 55 zone, all of those, whether you're going 90 in a 55 zone, all of those people going above the speed limit have broken the law. You are all lawbreakers. We are all lawbreakers. And because you chose to break the law between Reidsville and Milroy, you look in your rearview mirror and you see the flashing lights. And it isn't because there's a dance party on the side of the road by the bear cave. It's because there's a policeman or woman coming behind you. Because they want to pull you over because you have broken the law. You are going beyond the speed that is legally allowed. And as excited as you are to have a conversation with an officer of the law, because I know you are, you're like, hey, this is a chance. And it'd be great, maybe not at that particular moment, to encourage. Certainly in our country right now, we can encourage those that are in law enforcement. It might not look the right way if you do it at that particular moment. But as they pull you over for breaking the law, for being a lawbreaker and going at 56 or 70 or 90, you deserve a punishment. And that punishment is not you, you know, single guys, talking to a lady. F-I-N-E. Mm-mm. No, that's not what that fine means. This fine is going to be a monetary figure that will put a dent into your wallet and into your bank account. And so this police officer pulls you over. You have broken the law. You did the wrong thing. It's not like they misread it because you were going 54. You were going 70. You broke the law. You did the wrong thing. The police officer pulls you over. You deserve a punishment. You deserve a fine. Points on your license, all that good stuff. So that is what you deserve, whether it's 1 mile an hour over the speed limit or 50 miles an hour over the speed limit. You broke the law. But the police officer shows mercy. So what does that police officer do? What does that police officer do? Yeah, that's right. They show you mercy. And if they're going to show you mercy, they are not going to give you a fine. They might give you a warning. Or, to step it up a notch, maybe you broke the law and you did it, you were well over, you're beyond the warning limit, you know what I'm talking about. And so you deserve a fine. If that police officer decided to really show you mercy, that police officer says your fine is $190. They write out the fine on the piece of paper. Then, the police officer pulls out their checkbook and writes a check for $190. Now, we're like, that's crazy. Yes, that's mercy. Because the punishment that you deserved was taken by that police officer. And that is exactly what Jesus is doing on the cross. We, no matter whether we've just done a little bit wrong or a big bit wrong, we are sinners and we have done the wrong. We are the lawbreakers. And mercy is Jesus saying, Father, forgive them. Because they don't get it. Mercy is God saying, I am not going to give you the punishment you deserve. You know who's going to get the punishment you deserve? Jesus. And we're going to talk about that in a couple of weeks, this idea of substitution. But mercy is not getting the punishment that you deserve. And that is what happens in that moment where that police officer writes out their personal check to cover your fine. You did the wrong thing. And they showed mercy by writing it out. That is not getting what we deserve. And that is Jesus on the cross. That is why he was there. And he was there, and there's more things we'll talk about to kind of unpack this, because it's just like a, I don't know, it's like a beautiful flower. There's all these just pieces to it and cool parts to it. Or like a really good plot in a movie where you think you know the ending, and then you don't. And then you think you know the ending to the ending, and then you don't again. The Prestige is one of my favorites. I'm like, ah, oh, I never saw that coming. Oh, I never saw that coming. I mean, that you love that kind of stuff. And that's this whole story. Like the spoiler, as we read through this, as we look over these next few weeks, seeing how this whole thing unpacks and why Easter matters, why the cross matters. Because the spoiler this week is that we don't get what we deserve. We deserve death. We deserve separation from God. We deserve banishment. We deserve to have no relationship with him. But Jesus is on the cross saying, Father, forgive them. On our behalf, he is taking the punishment that we deserve. So, one of the things I want to do, I said this earlier, if you don't have the YouVersion app, I'd strongly encourage you to get it. It's just a really cool, free app that has literally every version of the Bible in pretty much every language out there. That is free, and you can read it anywhere you want. You can put it on your tablet, you can put it on your phone. And I think they've got it even now, like voice on some of these voice things, they can actually read it to you. But YouVersion app is a great thing, and we talk about it a lot in here. And there's some great reading plans with it. And for this month, I wanted to have us kind of together to do a plan together. We did this back during Inside MC3, and we talked about the comeback plan a couple weeks ago. But there's a plan here on YouVersion. It's called Red Letter Day. And that's the logo for it there, if you can see on the corner there. It's called Red Letter Day, and the MC3, if you're friends with MC3 on YouVersion, MC3 is doing that plan. They signed up for it this morning, so you can look for it. It's a 12-day plan, and we've got essentially, 21, actually, if you count Sunday to Sunday, 21 days between now and Easter. So the goal is, you know, within those 21 days that you could accomplish these 12 days of this plan. And it's the words of Jesus on the cross. So it's essentially what we're doing in the Spoiler Alert series. So I encourage you, you don't have to, but to kind of together say, we're going to do this plan together. It's called Red Letter Day on YouVersion. And you can do that, again, maybe do it every other day, something like that, just to tie this together. But that's what we're looking at. We're looking at this idea of what did Jesus say on the cross and understanding what that meant. Would you please pray with me? God, thank you so much that we don't get what we deserve. Thank you for your mercy. And I pray that as we just take a moment to grasp that, to consider the depth of that, that you would help, that you would change us from within. And if we need to, I don't know, not step up our game, because we can't be gooder. We can't be better. You knew that. And that's why you died for us, and we're offering forgiveness even while you're being nailed to the cross. But God, I pray that you would help us to understand it more. To not be like the followers, to not be like the Roman leaders there and the Jewish leaders, where they didn't realize it. They didn't get it. Help us to get it. Help us to understand the fact that Jesus was on that cross to forgive us, to show us mercy when we did not deserve it, and to take away the punishment that we did deserve. God, I pray for everyone here that we would just get that idea, and if we're new to the God thing, if we're new to Jesus, help us to understand it. And if we've heard it for all of our life but never made that decision to believe, God, may you change us from within to help us believe these things so that we may have eternal life. Thank you for the ending. Thank you that we can have hope because Jesus suffered and died for us. It's in his name we pray. Amen.